This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginia lawmakers wrapped up work on a special legislative session Monday afternoon. As Dave Mistich reports, the House and Senate completed 8 bills, including technical cleanups to legislation passed during the regular session, as well as supplemental appropriations.
Although lawmakers fast-tracked the measures on Governor Jim Justice's special session call, delegates debated House Bill 101 for nearly an hour. The bill creates the Department of Arts, Culture, and History. The measure also creates the position of curator to lead the department, in lieu of a traditional cabinet-level secretary. Randall Reed Smith currently serves as the commissioner of the Division of Culture and History and will assume the role of curator of the new department. Lawmakers dismantled the Department of Education and the Arts during the regular session with the passage of House Bill 4006. Just before signing the bill, Governor Justice fired Secretary Gail Manchin, who is also the wife of U.S. Senator Joe Manchin. Democrats in the House questioned whether the new curator position functions any differently than did the secretary of the previous department. Delegate Mike Pushkin of Kanawha County also questioned House Education Chair Paul Espinoza whether the bill eliminated bureaucracy.
So by creating a new department, we are now creating, we are eliminating bureaucracy? Is that what I just heard?
Well, as I explained in my opening, we're essentially reconstituting the existing Division of Culture and History as a Department of Arts, Culture, and History. So not creating a new bureaucratic entity, simply renaming the existing department.
The Educational Broadcasting Authority, the formal name of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and the West Virginia Library Commission remain independent agencies within the new department and will receive administrative support from the curator. With only a slight technical amendment, House Bill 101 passed the lower chamber on a 73-20 vote. The measure passed the Senate 28-1. Other bills included in the special session related to retroactively providing death benefits to the families of first responders, the management of state fleet vehicles, human trafficking, and supplemental appropriations. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich at the Capitol.
The city of Martinsburg has sued the federal government over chemical contamination of a drinking water plant. Liz McCormick has more.
Martinsburg attorney Ken Sayer filed a claim against the federal government this month, requesting the Air National Guard pay for damages caused by high levels of PFOA and PFOS that seeped into the water supply at the Big Springs Water Filtration Plant in Martinsburg back in 2016. That chemical is found in a firefighting foam used by the Air National Guard, a base the 167th Airlift Wing is located in Berkeley County. Steve Knipp, the utilities director for the city of Martinsburg, says the city acted quickly 2 years ago when an EPA water quality report made them aware of the contamination.
Well, Martinsburg was proactive in jumping in and, you know, taking that source of supply offline while we were designing treatment system for removing it.
The incident affected the southern and western parts of Martinsburg, but Knipp notes due to their grid system, it's hard to say exactly how many customers were affected. He notes, however, there are 6,000 customers total in Martinsburg, but not all were affected by the contamination. The city's water was switched over to the Kilmer Springs Water Filtration Plant, a backup to Big Springs. After the incident, Knipp says Martinsburg paid $4.5 million with the city's water and sewer savings accounts to research and install 8 granulated activated carbon systems, its main material made out of coconut shells, to filter out the chemical in the Big Springs plant. In December 2017, the plant was turned back online after tests showed the new system was effective.
The biggest cost ongoing from here on out is going to be carbon replacement. And that's actually dependent upon the concentration of the contaminant.
Knipp says each unit may need replaced every year. The Martinsburg water plant is one of hundreds across the country possibly contaminated by PFOS as a result of firefighting foams, potentially costing billions in cleanup. The Air National Guard promised the city of Martinsburg reimbursement for the carbon systems and other damages. Knipp says the money has not yet been received. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
Former Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship announced Monday that he will run for U.S. Senate as a third-party candidate in the November general election. The move comes after Blankenship finished third in the state's Republican primary earlier this month. Molly Bourne reports.
The question now is whether he'll be allowed to run as a Constitution Party candidate. A spokesman for Secretary of State Mack Warner told the Gazette Mail that Warner believes Blankenship isn't authorized to run in the general election against Senator Joe Manchin this fall. The Secretary of State's office has cited the state's sore loser law that says a candidate who loses a primary can't change voter registration and run in the general. But on Monday, that office said it's too early to speculate about what could happen. Blankenship served a year in federal prison after he was convicted of conspiring to violate mine safety standards leading up to the Upper Big Branch mine disaster that killed 29 people. He said the Constitution Party nominated him unanimously. Now the courts may ultimately decide whether Blankenship should get a do-over with voters. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Molly Bourne in Williamson.
When you think of female pioneers, women who paved the way for future generations, a few names probably come to mind. People like Amelia Earhart, Rosa Parks, Pearl Buck. But there are countless trailblazers whose names you may not know, women who changed the lives of people in their communities. One such woman was Fayette County native Eunice Fleming, who taught high school in Mount Hope for 41 years. Mrs. Fleming passed away this month at the age of 95. 3 years ago, several of the students she inspired decided to honor their former high school teacher by throwing her a party. Roxy Todd was there and has this remembrance.
It seemed like the entire town of Mount Hope had turned out to thank Eunice Fleming for being their teacher. Inside the Presbyterian Church, I saw hundreds of people, all different shades of black and white. They'd gathered just to celebrate this one woman who taught high school music and business for over 40 years.
If I can help somebody as I pass alone, if I can cheer.
That's Dr. Ethel Caffey Austin singing. She's been called West Virginia's First Lady of Gospel because she's had such a successful gospel music career. And she says it all started with her high school music teacher, Mrs. Fleming.
She showed her love still flowed out. Even though she was stern, you knew she cared. And that makes a lot of difference when you're working with kids. I ended up becoming a teacher. Lord have mercy.
Mrs. Fleming had a tough love style of teaching, which sometimes included disciplining students with paddling. She called her paddle the Board of Education. But many students talked about how they looked up to her. Here's former student Ollie Watts Davis.
Mrs. Fleming modeled for all of us. It's not that she did not see the barriers, but she would not be defined by them. And she wouldn't let them limit her.
And there were barriers. In Mrs. Fleming's day, most Americans didn't finish high school, let alone go to college. The people who did go to college were mostly young white men from elite upper-class families, not black women from coal camps. But Mrs. Fleming went on further than that and even got her master's degree. She was the first African-American to present a master's recital at Marshall University. I got to thinking about how much determination and talent it must have taken her to do all that. I wanted to hear more about Mrs. Fleming. So a few weeks later, I returned to Mount Hope, and I went to her home.
Hi. I'm good. Are you Ken?
Yes, I am.
Hey, I'm Roxy.
Roxy, great to meet you. Come right on in.
Her son, Ken, sat with us in her living room, which was full of pictures of her grandchildren. Mrs. Fleming and I sat with TV trays in front of our laps. She handed me a photograph from her grade school, which was one of those old wooden schoolhouses.
This was second, third, and fourth grade.
So it was about four rooms in there?
Four rooms in there.
Mrs. Fleming's dad and most of the other dads in her community worked in the coal mines. But Eunice Fleming's parents pushed her and her siblings to go to college. She was valedictorian of her high school. She went through high school very quickly and was still a teenager when she went to college.
Did you know that that's remarkable? That that's an amazing accomplishment?
Not necessarily so. Then.
You're modest.
Now, of course, when she was going to college in the 1940s, black people weren't always allowed to go to the same schools as whites. She went to a black college in southern West Virginia.
I went to Bluefield State. I had an excellent teacher, Dr. C.D. Reese from California. He just really encouraged you to finish college.
Dr. Reese pushed her to go on to do graduate work. By this time, it was 1944, and she'd already started her teaching career at DuBois High School. She was the youngest faculty member at the time. DuBois was the black high school. She continued teaching there as DuBois became integrated after Brown versus Board of Education. Meanwhile, Mrs. Fleming was taking graduate courses at Marshall University and at the University of Michigan. In 1944, Eunice Fleming was one of just a few black students in her program studying in the University of Michigan.
We were the first four blacks who...
And her son Ken told me that the white students refused to sit next to her in class. Every single chair around her was empty. But the other students got friendlier once they realized she had a lot of musical talent and knowledge. Ken grew up hearing these stories. He also remembers his mother was in high demand around Fayette County and spent a lot of her time singing at local events.
A lot of my childhood memories growing up were going with her to performances.
And she even had offers to come teach at colleges.
Because she had the ability to actually be at the Metropolitan Opera.
But she didn't go to the Metropolitan Opera. Instead, she stayed in Mount Hope because she felt that her most important work was to teach young students. She pushed many of them to go to college.
Tried to encourage students like that.
But why? Why did you think it was important to push them to go to college?
Because they had the talent. And that's meaning they had the talent to do more than they were doing.
One of the most successful students Mrs. Fleming mentored is Dr. Ollie Watts Davis. Mrs. Fleming was her basketball coach.
And we would be traveling on the school bus and singing all the top 40 tunes from on the radio, and we would be singing them as we traveled to and from the games. And she encouraged me to join the chorus. At that time, I think it was my freshman year, I was not in the choir. And she said, "Oh, you have a fine voice, and I think that you would really enjoy being there." I had some friends in the chorus. And so the next year I did join, and she auditioned me to be part of a small group of students who were selected to represent the school at a festival, at the county festival, as well as at the all-state chorus. And that was really a magical moment for me, being there with other students my age who had been selected by their teachers and regarded in such a high way. So that really inspired me, and then I went on to college and studied music education, and all along the way, she has been very supportive of all of my endeavors.
Ollie Watts Davis has had a successful music career. She got a Doctor of Musical Arts degree from the University of Illinois, and she's performed all over the world. When she made her debut at Carnegie Hall in 1990, Mrs. Fleming came to New York to see it. As I sat and talked with Ollie, we were in a sunlit room inside the Mount Hope Presbyterian Church. Ollie had just driven in from Illinois to perform for Mrs. Fleming's tribute concert. Inside the sanctuary, where hundreds of people had come to celebrate, Ollie sang this song called "You'll Never Walk Alone." Then, towards the very end of the concert, 93-year-old Mrs. Fleming came up to the stage with the help of her walker to receive an award.
I want to thank everybody, in particular my sweetheart. I could tell so many things, but I just want to do this.
Mrs. Fleming then sat down at the piano to play a church song called "Give Me a Clean Heart." She didn't want to make a speech. All she wanted to do was play her former students one more song. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd in Mount Hope.
That story originally aired in 2015. Mrs. Eunice Fleming passed away earlier this month. She was 95 years old. ¶¶ West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.